skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing song. Nothing but blue skies from now on.
Good morning and welcome to Live Well with Cantwell on 1490 WGCH. This morning, I'm going to be talking about geoengineering. And this is very important because the scientists have been having meetings and our government's position in the International Panel on Climate Change has been geoengineering as a technical fix for the climate change problem. And this is moving through very, very fast. So, first of all, I want to tell you, give you a definition of geoengineering and tell you some of the main ways that they are engineering the planet. The newest definition I came across is, quote, the deliberate large-scale manipulation of the planetary environment to counteract anthropogenic man-made climate change. And we all became familiar with the word anthropogenic in Al Gore's movie about climate change. An old definition that I've used, I've given a lot of speeches on geoengineering here in Greenwich and done work at the UN. Another definition is planetary scale, environmental engineering of our atmosphere, our weather, the oceans, and the Earth itself. Today, we're going to be looking at the different ways this is being done. The possibility of using geoengineering is deeply controversial, and geoengineering implies a technical fix. And many are arguing that the climate may be moving in such a direction, the global warming accelerating so fast, they may have to implement what they're calling Plan B. Plan A is to reduce carbon emissions, to cut back on our lifestyles, and therefore clean up the planet. Plan B is this technical fix. There are two methods of geoengineering. The first one is carbon dioxide removal from the atmosphere. That would be carbon sucking methods. And the most popular of that has been fertilizing the oceans with iron filings. And that's thought to promote the growth of tiny marine plants called phytoplankton that absorb carbon dioxide as they grow and on death take carbon to the ocean depths. So many companies have been engaged in this. It's been done around the Galapagos Islands. But the problem is it could create dead zones in the ocean. They are getting credit for sequestering carbon, and they don't even have to prove anything. They just fill a tanker full of iron filings, dump it in the ocean, and say that they're sequestering carbon, so they get the carbon credits. There has been a United Nations ruling against this, but as I understand it, only applies to governments. That was following an Indian and other country project last year. And so in the Biodiversity Convention, they put a moratorium on it, but I understand that it didn't stop the private corporations from doing it. The other one that I've been the most concerned with is solar radiation management. And this is aimed at reducing heat coming in or reflecting more of it out. The sun blocking methods, what they call a sunscreen for the planet. In fact, my daughter drew a cartoon for one of my programs I gave at the library showing the Earth with an umbrella over its head. And she made the sun look very mean. She said, does he look mean enough? And so the sun has become a mean entity that we have to block the rays from it. And so this all goes back to mimicking the cooling effects of large volcanic eruptions. And it goes back as far as 1883 in August. The painter Edvard Munch witnessed a very unusual blood-red sunset over Oslo, Norway, following the eruption of Krakatoa off the coast of Java. And that eruption cooled the earth. It inspired him to paint his famous painting, The Scream, which is seen as existential. Sometimes when I go down the beach here and I see these blood-red sunsets, and the day before the New York Marathon a year ago, the sunset was so red that the Long Island Sound looked blood red. And people were taking pictures and kind of oohing and aahing and saying, isn't it beautiful? But I was questioning what chemicals they put up there and wondering, you know, what I'm breathing. And there were a lot of people that got sick the next day. But the volcano explosion that really propelled this geoengineering forward was Mount Pinatubo that erupted in 1991. That released sulfur that cooled the planet, and it led to Paul Crutzen, who won the Nobel Prize for ozone hole remediation. It led him to publish a paper in 2006 calling for the release of sulfates into the atmosphere, and this pushed geoengineering into the mainstream. The other scientists didn't want him to publish the paper because they were all working behind closed doors. Nobody knew what they were doing. They really didn't want this to become public. And so now we see a powerful group of scientists, venture capitalists, and conservative think tanks. The same conservative think tanks that are denying global warming, in fact, they're all coalescing around the idea of reproducing the cooling effect of volcanoes by injecting sulfur dioxide into the stratosphere to counter climate change. And despite the enormity of what is being proposed, nothing less than seizing control of the climate, the public's been almost entirely excluded from the planning. And so we're seeing an increased cloud cover. We can assume these projects are going forward. To me, the ideas were hatched in our military labs, and I think we've let the military seize control of the planet that we live in, and now they're saying the solution is the geoengineering projects, which probably caused a problem in the first place. So I want to go to Roslyn Peterson, California Skywatch, and California Agriculture Defense Coalition. Roz and I have worked for 5 years together, and I brought her in as keynote speaker at the climate change conference at the UN in 2007, and she also spoke on a panel that I put together on the wild cards of climate change. And all through the preparatory phase of that conference, I tried to bring up the problems of geoengineering, weather warfare, weather manipulation, and the effects that was having on the climate, and kept insisting to the planning committee that we make this a part of the conversation. Roslyn, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here. Thank you for having me on your show today. One of the things I want to mention about geoengineering is that a Lawrence Livermore Laboratory press release warned that geoengineering was too risky in 2002. And, quote, it said, there are many reasons why geoengineering is not a preferred option for climate stabilization. These prescriptions include risks of global systems failure and the unpredictable responses of Earth's climate systems to large-scale human intervention. And this and other information that we know, if you put up a sulfuric dust cloud over us and you use this sulfur, it's going to come back down and it's going to increase acid rains, which means it will have detrimental effect on our trees, our forest lands, will contaminate water systems. So we have risky plans, and we have plans that may reduce crop production by lowering the amount of direct sunlight that reaches the earth. We could have increasing health effects from lack of vitamin D due to more and more intervention to reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the earth. It should be noted that the U.S. House of Representatives Science and Technology Committee report on geoengineering. The first one is at the printing press at the Congressional office right now and will be out this month. And as soon as we see a copy of this report, it will be put on Pauline's website, and it will be available to the public. A second final report is to be issued on September 15th of this year, and that report will give recommendations. However, all of the U.S. congressional hearings by the House so far have only had proponents of geoengineering and not anyone who's going to talk about its impact on climate, of reducing the amount of sunlight, the impact on ocean iron fertilization from marine biologists. No one testified from the USDA about the reduction in crop production. No one has testified about our current, in other words, the persistent jet contrails that cross our skies. NASA says they turn into man-made clouds that exacerbate global warming, change our climate, and negatively impact natural resources. No one is talking about reducing the amount of man-made clouds over us. So what happened in the hearings is the hearings, there were three of them in the U.S. House of Representatives, and the three hearings all, for the most part, had people that were promoting this type of technology and going forward with the program. This U.S. House Committee is working with the U.K. Parliament on global geoengineering governance. In other words, to go forward, but to have some sort of governance plan over these events. And so we're concerned because instead of saying, wait a minute, maybe we ought to have testimony from, in other words, all areas where impacts might be felt, pollution, water pollution, EPA, all of these different agencies, National Marine Fisheries Service should weigh in on impacts to endangered species. There should be all kinds of things that happen prior to any initiation of these global geoengineering projects because of the environmental impacts. So I encourage everyone to get the report. As soon as it comes out, you can call the Science and Technology Committee, and they can let you know exact date that it's going to come out and where you can get a copy online. It's not quite out yet, but it will be because they told me today it would be out any day now. So this is where we're at with what is happening. These projects are going forward. And part of the reason that all of these scientists want to do this is some of them are going to gain financially from their private corporations because they're going to say, well, if we put up sulfur in the atmosphere, we're going to reduce global warming, so therefore we should get offsets under the cap and trade provision of the proposed Kerry-Lieberman climate bill. So not only are we going to be here on Earth suffering the health consequences from using our oceans and our atmosphere as experimental laboratories, but we're also going to be paying for it and enriching these corporations under the cap and trade provisions of the Kerry-Lieberman climate bill, which they're going to try to pass as soon as they have the votes. So I'm going to turn you back to Pauline to address a few more of these issues and on geoengineering, because these type of programs are going to impact all of us, and they're going to have negative impacts on our trees, our health, our water supplies. They're going to have impacts on our oceans and on our weather. And since we are already modifying the weather with experimental weather modification programs in the United States, since we are already reducing the amount of sunlight that reaches the earth, and that reduces our crop production from the jet-produced man-made clouds, we need to really address how much more we want to do, and we need to address the impacts and have public discussion long before there's any recommendation that we should go forward with geoengineering programs and schemes.
Thanks, Rosalind. You're listening to Live Well with Cantwell, 1490 WGCH. And you've been listening to Rosalind Peterson, president of California Agriculture Defense Coalition. And you can find a lot of documents on her website, agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and on my website, aworldalert.com. And I want to take you back to the preparation for the climate change conference. A Canadian group, etc., ETC, released a report in response to the IPCC report that came out. And in that, they said that at least 9 national governments and the European Union have supported experiments to spread iron filings in the ocean to sequester carbon. And they said also that at least a dozen additional countries are involved in stratospheric weather climate modification. Look up, people. You can see it being done here. You can see the effects that we're having with our trees dying, the new trees that are being planted not thriving, and changes in our temperatures, changes in the weather. I have used a book for speeches. I've given a series of speeches at the Greenwich Library, and the National Academy of Sciences published a report in 1992. And when this came out, the chemtrail people saw this as a smoking gun, because the thing they promoted the most to offset global warming was to use commercial airplanes to create clouds, because you didn't have to pay them. They were already flying. We also know that there's proposals to use 747s to fly at very high levels. If you put particulates, sulfates, into the stratosphere, they remain there longer. At lower levels, they have to be put in all the time. So the unintended consequences of these are moral hazards. It would weaken resolve to reduce carbon emissions, and the motivation to decarbonize might disappear if we had an insurance policy. And some people say you'd have to keep it up forever. You could never stop it once it started. Other people say you could stop it. But a lot of people say the warming would get much worse. The costs are trivial. It gets the powerful lobbies off the government backs and permits yet more unrestrained growth and gives a green light to burning more coal. It avoids the need to raise oil taxes. The health hazards are worsening air pollution, because you're not reducing any of the consumption of fossil fuels. Increase in asthma, which we are seeing horrible increases in asthma. Vitamin D deficiencies that affect the immune system, causes rickets. We're seeing rickets in our children for the first time since we took them out of the coal mines. Depression from the lack of sunshine and blue skies. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about Munch painting The Scream, because it upset his psyche when he saw this very unusual sunset. They say that it would create milky blue skies. The skies won't be blue anymore. It would create more vivid sunsets, but everybody likes a vivid sunset. We're seeing 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's predicted. Aluminum is one of the particulates being used to create clouds. Increase in thyroid problems. Barium is a radioactive isotope. Environmental hazards are changes in regional weather patterns and an upset of the monsoon seasons. Increased flooding and droughts and a loss of effectiveness of solar panels. So if we want true green energy, our solar panels aren't going to work when we block the sun. We are seeing the dying of the trees. And increased use of genetically modified crops. Crops that are designed to tolerate aluminum. They're designed to tolerate salt, because some of these experiments involve spraying salt water to create clouds over the ocean. And, of course, those come in and rain out over our crops. So it is very important that we let people know that we are opposed to geoengineering, because I think when the IPCC convenes again, this is our government's position, a technical fix, and it affects all of us. And we know the scientists don't want top-down governance. They want to govern themselves. They want a free reign to do whatever they want to do. So you're listening to Live Well with Cantwell, 1490, WGCH, and Rosalind Peterson, President of Agriculture Defense Coalition, has been with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Pauline Cantwell is a local peace and environmental activist from Old Greenwich. She's been educating and sponsoring a series of events here in Greenwich in order to raise awareness and inform people about important aspects of climate change. Specifically, she's trying to inform the public on legislation like the Murkowski Resolution and the Carrie Lieberman Climate Bill. Pauline is a representative at the United Nations for Peace Action, the nation's largest grassroots peace and justice organization. Pauline helped form the Peace Caucus at the United Nations and has served as its governor since 1994. Pauline has served on the planning committee for the 2007 United Nations Non-Governmental NGO Conference on Climate Change, and she gave a speech on weather warfare the first day of the conference. Pauline is an educator, raising awareness and informing people about important aspects of climate change.
Skies smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see.
Welcome back to Live Well with Cantwell, 1490 WGCH. Today we have had Rosalind Peterson, President of Agriculture Defense Coalition, California, on with us, and we are talking about geoengineering, the plan to turn our planet into a giant terrarium. One of the scientists engaged in the geoengineering projects has said that it's necessary for us to live in the experiment. And I personally don't like living in an experiment. I prefer my plants to be the plants that God made, not geoengineered plants. And I prefer my sky to be blue, my sun to be yellow instead of bright silver. And so I want to talk about some of the private people who have been engaged in geoengineering projects. There is a new book out this year by Jeff Goodell, and that is How to Cool the Planet, Geoengineering and the Audacious Quest to Fix Earth's Climate. And in this book, he argues that even if we can muster the political will for it, cutting greenhouse gas emissions alone may not be enough to reduce the risk of climate catastrophe. He explores the scientific, political, financial, and moral aspects of geoengineering. And he has excellent interviews with the scientists engaged in these experiments. I highly recommend it if you're looking for a book to take to the beach. He questions, how are we going to change the temperature of whole regions if we can't even predict next week's weather? And what if a wealthy entrepreneur shoots particles into the stratosphere on his own? What happens to our relationship with nature when we all find ourselves living in a giant terrarium? But he argues we need to start taking geoengineering seriously because we might need to resort to Plan B for the planet. So the scientists are urging small-scale tests of these. There's another book, Super Freakonomics, and that has a chapter on global cooling. The title is Super Freakonomics - Global Cooling. And in chapter 5, it questions what do Al Gore and Mount Pinatubo have in common. It talks about an unusual laboratory in Bellevue, Washington, a suburb of Seattle, Intellectual Ventures, that is being funded by Bill Gates. And Nathan Mervold, who was a former chief technology officer at Microsoft, is its ringleader. It employs top scientists like Ken Caldera and Lowell Wood to dream up processes and products. They filed more than 500 patent applications last year, and this is all for geoengineering. They also acquire patents from outside vendors, inventors. So right now they control more than 20,000 patents, or that was when this book was written. I'm sure they have much more. Some are calling it a patent troll. So they recognize there's money to be made when we get the cap and trade bill through, we set a price on carbon, then they will be making money. One of the projects proposed is a fire hose to heaven, and that's a 2-inch hose, 2-inch in diameter and 18 miles long, that would be suspended by balloons, and then they would pump liquid sulfur dioxide up into the stratosphere. And when you put something in the stratosphere, it goes around the Earth very fast and creates what some call Badico's blanket, an insulating thing. So Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Mervo looked at Athabasca oil sands in northern Alberta, Canada. They've got these huge piles of sulfur sitting around. So it'd be very cheap. Their, quote, Save the Arctic, unquote, plan could be set up in just 2 years at a cost of roughly $20 million, with an annual operating cost of about $10 million. So Bill Gates also has a cloud whitening trial that he's wanting to implement off the coast of California and going down into Latin America. It would be 10,000 square kilometers, and that would spray up ocean water to create the reflectivity of marine clouds. So the research body Silver Lining, it's a U.S.-based research body, has received $300,000 from him. So he's not the only investor. This created outrage at the last biodiversity meeting in Nairobi this spring, and they called for a moratorium on cloud experiments like this. However, it didn't pass. Canada bracketed, but it will be brought up in their next meeting. We also see Richard Branson from Virgin Air. He set up a war room to do battle with global warming, and he wants to mobilize successful entrepreneurs on, quote, the path to victory, unquote. And he's calling for market-driven solutions to climate change. So you can see why it's so important for the cap and trade. And so, Rosalind, we have 1 minute to wrap up. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, I'd like to say that when we play with our environment, we have consequences that can be beyond our imagination. And instead of reducing our greenhouse gases, instead of taking all the causes and beginning to reduce them, what we're doing is we're going to be adding to our problems by putting chemicals in the air, and there's toxics as well, and we're going to be exacerbating our problems. And we don't know if it'll really work. What we're going to find is that it probably will poison our soils for crop production, lower solar panel production. So I encourage everyone to learn more about this subject and to ask for U.S. congressional hearings where all the voices can be heard.
Thanks, Rosalind. And thank you, listening audience, for being with Live Well with Cantwell today. And we will be coming next week.
The Voice of Greenwich. This is 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
ABC News Now. I'm Karen Chase. At least three people were gunned down at a beer distribution company in Manchester, Connecticut this morning. Police say an employee with a gun walked in and opened fire, killing two others before he was shot and killed. It's unclear how. A fire at the scene is also being put out. No word on whether it's related. Treasury Secretary Tim